It's waxing lyrical, thanks to NZ On Air Music.
Moana Maniapoto, Moana and the Tribe.
My very first song would have been about 1981 or 82, and that was Kaere He Wahine, which is a song that we used to sing at St. Joseph's Māori Girls College. It's like, Kaere He Wahine, ri te kia hine moa, tahi anatana hia hia ki te mutunga, he hinawa e hika e. Now, I think that got played like, 3 o'clock in the morning on Radio New Zealand, that would have been about it. So it's a little bit ahead of its time. That was my very first one. I was at law school here at Auckland University, and I had to pay my way through university. So I used to go on all these talent quests with my girlfriend, and we used to win stuff, mainly alcohol, which wasn't too helpful, but, on the odd occasion, money. And then I just ended up singing in the clubs just to sort of keep myself going, recording with Dalvanius and doing backing vocals on a number of television programs when they were kind of like viruses everywhere, a lot of live music shows. And then I joined the Wellington band Aotearoa, so that's how I got into it. Started my own band after that, the Moa Hunters. There were a lot of club venues in Auckland, and bands used to line up to try and cut other bands out. We were all playing covers, but you actually hone your craft when you're playing everybody else's music. That's oh God, Madonna was killing me off in those days. She was everywhere. There was like Brothers Johnson and a lot of funk music that we really used to love. So people had to duplicate that really well. And I know a lot of people look down their noses at musicians who play covers, but for me that was a great grounding experience, I learned how to use my voice and I played with great musicians. And then it was a transition to writing my own stuff that was challenging.
There was a song in 1987, Kua Makona, which was a message to the youth of New Zealand.
Yeah, I was pulled in to do that, actually, so it wasn't my idea or anything. Dalvanius, my husband at the time, and sort of hit him up and said, my missus can sing really awesome, you should cut her a break. He sort of went, okay, and tried to move on to the next person. And then years later, when he was involved in a campaign from the Alcoholic Liquor Advisory Council, he sort of approached me to ask if I'd front the song. He wanted to promote Māori language, but also he thought there was just no Māori woman out there singing original music. It was, when I thought about it, I was like, yeah, that's right, that's true.
Mama.
was my first exposure to the industry, having my photographs airbrushed and learning how non-responsive radio was to Māori language music. I got a lot of good mentoring from Dalvanius. Dalvanius was very much a mentor for me within the industry in the early days, and my manager. He kind of pushed me to the forefront. He was awesome in the studio. He was really good as a producer, listening to him layer various tracks and the vocals and doing the mixing. So that's where I love that process myself. He's got a movie coming out about him shortly. Poor year. A feature. Actually, me and Annie Crummer and Hinuihi Mohi sat in the grass outside the museum and sang a little chorus from that, Poor Year. No one ever really knew the words. They'd just go, Poor Year. And think, Poor Year. That was it, eh? Great song. I released that through Murray Kamiki at Southside Records, and that was a cover, that was a Phil Spector song, and he wrote that with a woman called Toni Wine, who I actually ended up meeting when she came to New Zealand, because Graham Reid from the New Zealand Herald let her know that I'd recorded this song, Black Pearl, and that it, you know, went right up the charts, went gold and all that stuff. So she really liked the version, and I ended up singing it at the Altair Centre with this band that she was performing with. I went to watch them, and to my absolute horror, they said, "We got a woman here who put out this song." I said, "No, no, no, I haven't sung this for like 2 decades. So I got up then, gave it a bash, and was all right.
Black Pearl, Black Pearl, precious little girl, let me put you up where you belong.
I did the video for Black Pearl when I was about 8.5 months pregnant. So yeah, so that was in 1990 or something. So I remember Murray Kamik coming up to the hospital and showing me the cover of the single, and do you like that, and blah, blah, blah. But you see, the radio stations played that, and it had a great video, so it was played. Then I went to put out A, E, E, or U, which I co-wrote with one of my backing vocalists, and with Stuart Pearce, and that got the old heave-ho. They said no foreign language music on the playlist. So that was the end of that one.
It's time to
educate.
Oh,
yourself in history. A song to pursue the future and you will see. Life doesn't have to stay this way. Tomorrow makes our thought of it better is today. It's a global thing, been happening for a while. Eminem do it in a funky fresh style. Going back to the roots, that's where it's at. No, it's not hard to do, just got to attack. The facts that surround you here with the song to get you in the mood. Let's take imagination in the situation. New generation, influence the nation. Soon amount of fire could be strapped up inside. Friends together, sisters, brothers, learning to a groove. Yes, we are here to get you on the move. Such a lot to learn at fingers touch. At first cross may not be much, but it's knowing where you come from, where you're going to. Checking out the facts to get you through. Take a slow and a cruise, not a game on to lose. Take your time and the climb and you will find there will be a friend. Help you along the way to have the strength along to say.
Foreign language, yeah, those were the days, early 90s. So that started the whole torturous challenge, which remains. You can argue till you're blue in the face. Well, I remember saying something at the New Zealand Music Awards. I was in the finals for Māori Song or Album of the Year, and I sort of said, hands up anyone who's heard any of them. And of course it was deathly silence. I said, you won't have because you're not playing on the radio. And then this programmer came up to me afterwards. He said, you make me feel like I'm in the KKK. And I said, well, you're not playing our bloody music. And he said, well, it doesn't fit the format. So anyway, he came around home for dinner because we said, let's have an ongoing conversation, and went through all the reasons. And at the end of the day, he said, it's because of the language.
Tahi. Toru fa ti ore mai te rangi, ti ore mai te rangi, ti ore mai mau 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 te ua fiti mai te ra, mau 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 te ua fiti mai te ra, e re re kotare. Ere ko atare ki runga pū wharawhara ruru pare hoke mate i te ua, ruru pare hoke mate i te ua. Ere re e noke, ere re e noke mai topo korua, kei ki te waike mate i te ua. Kei ki te wai ke mate i te ua. Ei e, ei e, fiti mai te ra. Ei e, ei e, fiti mai te ra.
We've performed hundreds and hundreds of concerts around the world in places where no one understands English, let alone Māori. You know, in Spain, in front of like 10,000 people, and they're all raging up large, as we do when Yasuna Dua comes to New Zealand, or you go to WOMAD and you hear people singing in Cuban or Gaelic or something. But they find the same challenges in their own country. I mean, I wrote an article in E Tangata recently about institutional racism, and, you know, we have to look at structural change. Just kind of tinkering around the edges doesn't work. So it's actually talking about racism and not pretending it doesn't exist, and then doing something about it, and has to come from the grassroots and come down from the Crown because they're the treaty partner. And people need to just lighten up and listen to music. Jesus, I think there's lots of great New Zealand music out there, and I'm always constantly thrilled when I hear stuff. And I was playing some New Zealand music as I was coming here today on my phone, listening to Jacob You know, I love that band. Listening to Louis Baker has beautiful songs, and Tama Waipara and Rob Ruha. And so I look forward to discovering all different kinds of New Zealand music. It's just really uplifting. It's great seeing new bands come through, like my son's band Ihi, which is a cool little band, great vocals, and doing their own thing and starting out, and it's fascinating to watch and try and support them. So, yeah, every day is New Zealand Music Day. Every minute's Māori music too. I like listening to New Zealand music and thinking, well, I've never heard of that band, I'll have a listen. And sometimes I hate it, and a lot of times I love it. I'm pleasantly surprised. People get fed the same stuff on radio. Sometimes it's what they end up liking, because it's like reality shows. You get fed it. Next minute you're waiting for the frickin' Bachelor to come back on. Not me! Stupid show.
New Zealand Music Month, when that was instigated, what were your thoughts on the concept?
I thought it would be business as usual, and that the focus wouldn't go on Māori language music or strong kaupapa-driven music. I think they try a bit, but they're still banging up against the brick wall with radio, and New Zealand On Air has given it a, you know, Brendan did a lot when he was there trying to make it easy for radio stations by putting Māori language tracks on a CD, the iwi hit disc, but he told me radio stations basically said, oh, well, that's for the, you know, the other stations. So basically it's kind of the same old for us. I just use it as an opportunity. Oh, well, okay, we'll just put our single out this month. And, you know, if people have gigs on, then the commission is really good at helping to promote it. But it's like Waitangi Day, you know. Every day is Waitangi Day. Every day should be New Zealand Music Day. It's an evolving industry. And it's quite sexist, ageist, racist, everyist you can think of, really. I didn't experience so much the sexism as the racism. That was the issue I had. And I've always been in bands with, leading them actually, with men. And we've always had a very complimentary relationship. There's been, you know, the airbrushing of the photographs, so I never had any freckles. Like, what the hell? What's wrong with that? Suggestions that I could have a lower top or some dumb thing like that. But nothing too challenging. And in my own band, we all share the same sort of values. The men are quite feminist in a way. And we try and look at that Māori worldview of the complementarity. So, yeah, haven't had too many dramas there. I finished in music for about a year. Well, my husband happened to be my manager and we split up. So he's such a slacker, he decided he didn't want to be my manager just because we'd got divorced. I mean, what the hell? Where's your commitment? So I kind of went into a little hiatus, and then my new manager came into my life, who's not my husband, Saul De Sully, who was based in Europe. He's just a whole basket of knowledge and very strategic and very creative himself. So, you know, I rely on his advice for lots of things. He's always liked my music and approached me one January to say, I think Europe is ready for your kind of music. Do you think you can get a band together, write some new songs, get up to Europe and I'll sort out a tour? And I sort of thought, Jesus, okay. Yeah, okay. And I had, about 3 or 4 months to do that. I've been to the States with More Hunters and Aussie and Pacific, but not to Europe. And so we went up there. He had 38 gigs lined up for us. It was really full on. It was a learning curve, because went over there, and as you do when you're trapped in a nightliner bus with 8 people, you find out who's a lunatic and who should have stayed home. Oh my God, I've got a frickin' loop-to-loop in my band. What the hell? How can I offload them? You know, and we went silly. Jesus, there was free alcohol in the green room. So New Zealanders go silly, hoover it all up. So it was a real learning curve for us. We grew up over the following couple of years and realised we could actually cope without being too silly about it.
And how did you do there over the years following?
Awesome. you know, develop a good fan base in particular countries, particularly in Germany and Italy, some in Russia, good network of fans, and played some incredible festivals like Montreux Jazz Festival and big festivals in front of 10, 20,000 people who'd never seen anything like the kind of music that we do. I remember being in one festival in Switzerland, St. Gallen Festival, and I think the Datsuns were playing at it. And we had the stink slot. It was like in the bloody morning, 10 o'clock or something. So everyone's still in their little wee pup tents. It was a mess. All you could see was all these tents. So I said to my warriors, okay, go out there and do a haka and do it really loud, really loud. It was the biggest stage ever. You could have driven a couple of huge trucks on it. So they did this haka and they just screamed at the top of their lungs and all these people just came crawling out of their tents like, what the hell? And we had our thousands watching us by the end of it. Yeah, they're good, they're useful, those warriors. We used to always start off in the early days with a bit of a haka, just a kind of a yoza, yoza, looky over here now. We incorporate it into our songs. There's standalone haka, but usually it's quite fused, and that's fun. Yeah, enjoy that part.
Have you ever considered living elsewhere?
Not really, not for a long length of time, because this is where I get my inspiration from, and that's where my roots are. And I've got a 25-year-old son and a 7-year-old daughter, and my mother's still alive, so I'm kind of pretty whānau orientated like that. But, you know, a year in Paris or somewhere, Istanbul, yeah, yes, like that. Still on the cards. Funny, though, because I've got two kids, and with Kimi Ora, who was at varsity here, he was the Māori student president for 2 years. He loved it up here. I think he's probably still wandering around here. I would leave him at home when I toured with the Moa Hunters because I thought it was the best thing for him. You know, stability, stay at home with his grandparents. But with my daughter, who's 7, she came away with us when she was maybe 3 weeks old, came to our first gig in Aussie, and she's been everywhere. She's been to every part of the world with us. Been a great experience for her, so I hope to continue taking her. Her world is open, she's open to languages, she knows you'll meet people for like half a day and never see them again, and that's all good, that's what it is. So she's learned to enjoy the moment. It actually is great taking a child away with a band too, because the band tends to behave themselves a little bit better. Mind you, we've all grown up a bit more, but they're great teachers, and you know, I love my band. I've got great musicians, and my sister's a wonderful singer, and my partner Toby, he manages us on the road when he can. So, you know, we have fun. We're a tribe.
We are warriors, warriors, the mighty nation, and cross the white. White creation, we won't kneel down, we won't kneel down, up on the ground, oh how I love to hear them say, my Māori name, ko te iwi Māori, tato, ko ngā tonga piripono, anga tūpuna, ko te aroha, ko te aroha, me te mana, me te mana, me te tino rangati, tanga e.
We are, we're moving en masse. Yeah, that's good fun though. We've got a tribal members throughout the world. Favourite places? We always love Italy because, you know, those accents just drive you wild, don't they? Plus they've got great food and excellent shoes. And I just like all that kind of yelling and carrying on that makes you think they're having a scrap, but really they're just trying to figure out where to park the bus. I mean, we've had hilarious times on there going on television programs and, you walk on the set and the whole camera crew is smoking their heads off and the camera's going up and down into the cleavage of the female presenter. You think, what the hell? But, you know, it's an awesome place, great venues. So, Italy, Russia, really love Russia. Moscow, played some great places there. Yeah, Istanbul, pretty awesome. Lots of wonderful places. Up in the Arctic, pretty amazing. 24-hour light or 24-hour dark, it just throws you. 4 o'clock in the morning, you're having a drink and think, I'm a bit tired, what's the time? Oh my God, it looks like the afternoon. Yeah. So Not Alone is a bilingual song. It starts off with a big karakia at the start from Scotty Morrison. And he wrote that as if he was Ngāti Rōirangi, who was our spiritual leader on our ancestral waka of Te Arawa, who tried to calm the waves for the journey of the Te Arawa waka. So there's this very beautiful evocative start, and then it's an English track, which is basically saying, oh, we're not alone. We're not alone when we go through these journeys and adventures. We go with our spirits and our gods and our ancestors. And I really wanted Grant Hoa from Swamp Thing to sing with me, and he has got the most amazing, gritty, bluesy voice. So that's my favourite song that I've written in the last couple of years. I love it. It's a tribute to celestial navigators and voyagers, Māori but also Pākehā, people that sort of got on the boats and waka and thought, oh, I might just go to the end of the world, something I'd never do myself. And they had confidence and they took risks and had courage. So, yeah, wanted to dedicate that one to those ones.
Ngā wai te wīwī, ngā wai te wāwā. Ka kai te rangi e tūne, ka kai te papa e takotone. Ka kai e tangaro e horatūra, te tomo o te kore kore. Rutu ei, runga rutu ei, raro rutu ei o, tora paka hiwi te whatu te atea, nuku te whatu te atea rangi. Huri ana te pō, huri ana te ao. Ka eke I tō, ihi ka eke I tō, wehi ka eke hāware aitu, ka eke hāware tangaroa. Koitai, koitai, koi watu teo teo itai, koi watu tara tara itai, tēnei te vai ka eke ko te vai a tangaroa. Hiwero, hau mai te Māori, hau mia huia, tāikie.
I've come so far, journey's been long, searching for something, place to belong. Wind and the waves carried me. Made of eyes wide open, full of hope and tired of waiting. Come
don't know nothing.
I know nothing.
Nothing, nothing, nothing.
I work with Paddy Free now, who is my co-writer and producer, and he's always, while he's tittering around, you know, I might do them vocals or we might be mucking around with the bass lines and that, and he's finding sounds. He goes, oh, this must be boring for you. You can go and have a cup of tea. I said, oh, man, I love it. I love, love, love. It's like making a documentary when you're editing and you're finding all the little components and bringing them together.
Do you ever see them in your mind?
I saw a documentary, actually. A friend of mine directed it, Jessica Hobbs, for Australian television, and it sort of laid out the whole occupation of Timor, the invasion by Indonesia, in this film. And, you know, it was shocking. It was really shocking. I didn't know a lot about it, and I was quite affected by that. So that's what inspired the song, the inaction by Australia and New Zealand to this invasion and the cruelty that happened. And there's still huge challenges in Timor, you know, with its natural resources being plundered by Aussie. That's what inspired the song, and the fact that these things are happening in our own backyard, kind of, you know. People in Europe really look at the Pacific as a sort of a club paradise. And you have to say, well, you know, we've had the odd coup in Fiji and stuff going on in Solomons and Bougainville and Papua New Guinea and West Papua. So it's not what it seems to the tourist. It's kind of like, do we see any commonality? Can we empathise? Can we express our solidarity somehow? I mean, terrible things going on in the Pacific now, in Nauru and that. I banged into some guy, security guard, when we were last performing in Aussie, and he was showing me photos he'd snuck out. Shocking, shocking.
Do you ever see them in your mind? Destination Pacific. Palm trees, coconut cream, lying in the sand, feeling nothing but a cool breeze. Turn your page every hour. Turn your back on a troubled world. Sleep until the sun goes down, yeah. Don't think you don't know me. Don't act like you don't see me. Don't pretend you can't do anything at all. Ooh yeah, ooh yeah, ooh yeah. There's fire in paradise. Fire in paradise. There's fire.
So that was that song, but I always kind of thought, that was quite bright. It's about 80% bright. And then my manager bought me a remake for my birthday. he got in touch with Moritz from Dubbing, which is a French dub band, awesome band, who I met in Wymed. And Moritz, he re-recorded everything with his musicians in Paris or Munich or somewhere, and then played that back to me. I thought, that's cool, but I reckon we need another voice. So he had a whole bunch of male voices and just played them. That's the one, that one, that guy there. So we've got Scaramucci in there, he's a dancehall artist. No damn idea what he's saying.
Because them for some fight with guns and bombs, kill so much people, work out many nation. Some don't know themselves heading for destruction. Some still searching though for salvation. Some think them all right when them doing all wrong. Some no overstand, some no have no real plan. But me see say all of them, they must be blind. And them no see say that we see them long time.
He's got this gravelly, woman, shaggy voice. Yeah. But I really like it. It's kind of, it's very rootsy reggae, and we've just had my last songs that I just did were very electronic and very sparse, which I really like because they're quite dark and brooding and slightly depressing. I love that. So this was kind of quite light for me. But, you know, I do like it. I really love it. But I particularly like Moritz's offsider, his name's Echo Umberto, has done a dub remix. The only thing about dub remixes, they take out nearly every vocal. What is with that? Tiki Tani did that too to me. Oh, that's awesome. Do you think you could stick another couple of words in there? Anyway, it's very cool, very good groove. I think probably for me the biggest thing that music has given me is the opportunity to meet lots of different people from different cultures. And the downside of struggling with Māori language music or kaupapa driven music here in New Zealand is that is what resonates with people offshore, you know. And so that's allowed me and my band to just meet some extraordinary people and have some amazing experiences that, you know, the likes of Lorde with her wonderful music will never have, because my Māori identity gives us entree to an indigenous network around the world that's so rich and beautiful. We've done lots with indigenous Australians. So there's a song, Water People, which is a collaboration between my band and Jakapura Munyaran, two female vocalists and a didgeridoo player, as well as a Scottish band called Brebuck. So they had their flutes and their bagpipes. There's 22 of us on stage. We played the Sydney Opera House. We played Heb Cowart in Scotland and Wymed. We launched it at Wymed. And I was thinking, this isn't going to work. You know, bagpipes? Come on, hello. And but they're very clever musicians, and actually it did work. It works really well. So the song Water People is kind of a celebration of those connections, you know, and a celebration of language. So you hear Jakapura chanting, and then you hear the bagpipes, which are very primal, much like haka is. Yeah, so that's the kind of thing that we've enjoyed finding, that commonality.
Calling on the water people, calling on the rain. Calling on the water people, calling on the rain. Calling on the water people, calling on the rain. Calling on the water people, calling on the rain.
Te ora ngā o tērā, ko te ara tērā.
That was Waxing Lyrical, thanks to NZ On Air Music,